Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and yes, I'm back this week. Thank you very much to Megan White for sitting in last week while I was indisposed at a family wedding. And joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont-Urie. I know, it's probably better I didn't come back, but I'm back anyway.
How was the wedding?
It was fine. You know, typical wedding stuff. It was very nice, thank you.
Good. They both accepted, right?
Yes, which is bad news for both of them, but no. well, let's just crack on with what was an interesting weekend in Portugal, a return to Portugal, and of course it was a dominant win for Pecco Bagnaia on the Ducati, a crash for Fabio Quartararo, the first DNF of his 2021 season. And of course, controversy in the Moto3, which we will talk about. But let's start with the race winner, because, you know, Pecco was just faultless all weekend.
Yeah, he was the guy to beat from day one. And I think, yeah, it's a shame that he didn't get into this kind of form at the beginning of the year, because we would have had a completely different season, but it is what it is, and I think that the good news is that we're gonna have a completely different Pecco next year. A title contender from day one, which is really, really good news, not only for Ducati but also for the championship.
Well, yeah, Pecco's spoken about this a lot, how he didn't lose the championship in Misano. He said he lost it at other points in the season where he just wasn't good enough. But we have seen this real sort of breakthrough from Pecco, and he's almost become the perfect Ducati rider because he's so at one with that bike.
Yeah, and we've had different, let's say, kinds of race winning from Pecco, because we've seen him winning a close fight with Mark in Aragon, and then we've seen him winning going away. So let's see what I was speaking with Ducati guys, and I was making jokes. Is it possible to don't touch the bike? I mean, to carry on in 2022 with the same bike and say, well, this is not happening because all the others. But the problem is that if you look at the numbers, Pecco was not that bad. He had his main fault was in Mugello when he crashed going in front. Also, he had two, let's say, strange tires.
Yeah.
And the crash in Misano too. But other than that, it was a really good season from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look back to the start of the season, you know, three podiums in the first four races was very, very good form. And I mean, you can't not forget that Portugal race where he came from 11th through to 2nd. So the form was always there. And it is the thing, if you think about, had he not crashed at Misano and then he'd won at Portugal and Fabio had crashed out, the points gap would have been something like 13 between them going to Valencia. So the championship was... could very much have been on a knife edge had things gone a bit differently.
Yeah, but it's all about if and bad. Yeah. But I mean, a championship you never can you don't have to approach it this way. But in the end, it only shows that Pecco will be ready. Ready.
Absolutely.
He's ready.
Yeah.
Ready.
Well, because all elements of his game are spot on now. You know, fifth pole in a row, so he's got qualifying nailed. He's got the races nailed. He's just doing everything.
And he has.
He's doing everything in the way that Fabio did this season.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's shown the consistency than Jack misses.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a very fair point. I mean, Jack, of course, back on the podium, but that was his first podium since Barcelona, which is not good. But, you know, circumstances have worked against Jack at certain races this year. That's fair enough, but it's not the kind of form that he needs to be showing.
No, not if you want to be a title contender. I mean, maybe last year, but not this year, and I don't think it's going to be in the future. So if he wants to really be a guy fighting for the title, he needs to be more consistent. So that's what all the champions talk about. Even last year with John Mir, he was the most consistent, considering that was the most inconsistent championship of the decade, probably. But and this year, Fabio has been the most consistent guy on track.
Yeah, absolutely. Fabio, of course, didn't have a great race. He got all of it unraveled for him in qualifying, and his race very much highlighted the big problem that Yamaha has that they need to fix this winter, is that they need top speed, because Fabio could do nothing to get past Jorge Martin in that race. You know, there was four Ducatis ahead of him, and, you know, there was just nothing he could do. And this is something he pointed out. He said, look, we can bring new chassis at any point in the season. That doesn't matter. What Yamaha needs to be doing is focus fully on the engine. And I think we know that that's going to be the main focus anyway, but I think the Algarve Grand Prix has sort of acted as a wake-up call for Yamaha.
Yeah, well, I think it will be good if they take, and I hope it will be good if they don't do the same as Suzuki, because, I mean, I don't think Yamaha is going to make the same mistake, but they need to work really hard on that top speed, because don't forget that Honda has not been there for most of the championship. Now the bike is getting there, but that shows that next year probably the bike will be much better than this year. Ducati is always fast and it's always very regular, and Suzuki, I think that after this experience, they will push hard to get a better bike. So I think that Yamaha really needs to make an extra effort to have a bit more top speed, because otherwise it will be a nightmare for them to fight with the Ducatis.
Well, yeah, especially next year when you consider there's going to be eight Ducatis on the grid.
That's why.
You know, at least five of them are going to be up the front. You know, Martin, Zarco, Bagnaia, Miller, and you can't not think that Bastianini is going to be up there as well. So, and if you listen to what some of the other riders have been talking about, like Aleish, for example, and Maverick, they say the Aprilia is very quick in a straight line. If they can make another step forward and Yamaha doesn't, that's another bike that all of a sudden... And as we saw in the Algarve race, what a Yamaha rider has to do in that situation is override the bike, and more often than not, it ends in a mistake, which is what ended Quartararo's race.
And sooner or later, KTM will touch the right key, and they will be again. They will be more often on top. So, yeah, I mean, Yamaha apparently has the best package with Fabio, but they need to give him the thing that he's missing.
You mentioned Suzuki there, of course. Juan Mir had a great weekend, one of the best weekends we've seen of Juan all season. I think that's testament really to the fact he said after Misano that he took a week off. You know, he was mentally drained, and I think this season has been a lot harder on him than he probably expected it, because he came into this year already from race one limited by the fact the bike hadn't developed.
Yes, but I think, because I've been talking with few Suzuki technicians and mechanics this last weekend, and they believe that while this is probably a reality that the bike was not developed as much as the others, it probably affected more the riders than the problem itself. You know what I mean? So because I asked straight away, what has changed this weekend for having you the first front row in MotoGP? Because on qualifying, it was the first front row. And they all agreed, nothing. Nothing. We didn't touch anything. So it was all mental.
In the brain, yeah. Wait, well, that's, I mean, that is the thing with everything's so close in MotoGP now. The mental aspect is it's always been a big part of the sport, but it's an even bigger element now, I think.
Correct. I mean, from starting third, which is the position that Mir start last Sunday, to start seventh, mm-hmm. maybe it's just a couple of tenths, but it means two rows.
Yeah.
So for the start, it's a huge difference.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't quite see the sort of the same thing we have seen with Suzuki in the past, in that they come strong towards the end of the race, but that wasn't anything to do with Juan as such. That was just Pecco being in another league completely. But it's a very good sign that at least the Juan Mir that won the championship last year is kind of, he's more back now. You know, we're seeing the real Juan Mir again. I mean, he has had a strong season, if you consider the problems with the bike, but
yes, but not if his target was fighting for the title. Not enough.
Yeah, exactly.
It was not enough. So that's, as you say, that's the champion we were expecting to see.
Yeah.
For most of the season. So, and he's not being there. He just appeared at some.
Yeah.
Specific races, but you cannot be a title contender appearing and disappearing.
The same can be said, I think, in terms of inconsistency for Honda this year. We know how difficult the bike has been, but we saw a really big breakthrough weekend for Alex Marquez, which is, we've not seen him that good all year, which again is, Paul Espargaro talked about this, how much the bike has changed since the last Portugal race. But even with that said, this was quite a serious change of pace for Honda this weekend.
Yeah, they were all there. I spoke with some mechanics of Mark, and they were all very upset by the absence of Mark, because they all believe, whoa, the Honda is really performing better than expected here. So we don't want to think what Mark would have been able to do here. So yeah, they have made a step, and they are gonna keep working. Let's see if Mark will be ready for the last race, and crucially for the test, which is the main and the key at this time of the year.
Yeah, well, of all the manufacturers, you have to say the two-day test at Jerez is going to be the most important thing for Honda, because they need, this new bike they've got is quite radically different, and they really need to make sure that they pick the right direction with the engine, because that has sort of been the main issue, really, is all of its problems have been related to the engine.
Yeah, and it's a completely different bike with completely different aerodynamics. And they need to have the best rider to give his feedback, because otherwise it will be another really difficult start of the year for them.
Yeah, for sure. One manufacturer that is just strange so far has been KTM, because The form for the past, you know, they struggled at the start of the season, and we know why. They struggled with the front, a lot of times with front tyre, and they were struggling with the chassis, and then they brought a new chassis, and that changed things completely. And now it's just gone the other way again. For the past four or five races, it's just not gone KTM's way. And the troubling thing is that from the end of practice, they don't really know what they can do. There's very a limited window of how this KTM operates, and it's bizarre.
It looks like the limit of the bike is much lower than expected. So I know that, because I spoke with a friend of mine working there, that they have loads and loads and loads of pieces to try. So they will have this winter, they will be working as hell with the test team, and so. Yeah, I think they are aware that they have. It looks like they have lost the way a bit, so they have to recover.
Yeah, for sure. And that to me is interesting because, of course, they're still going to have Brad and Miguel, but they're going to have two rookies at Tech 3. What they really need is a more stable lineup. And the fact that they're getting rid of Iker, for a number of reasons, but from that point of view particularly, is they kind of right now need stability. And now they're going to bring two rookies in. It seems like the job is going to be very difficult for KTM. And Brad Binder spoke about this. He said one of the things that has made things difficult is the fact they can't test anymore in season. And I think that's hit KTM a lot harder than they've been willing to admit up till now.
Well, I mean, but in the end, you can be very, how do you say it, cocky. But the concessions are for some reason. Mm. And when you are used to train whenever you want, and with any conditions you want, it makes a difference. Remember what happened in Formula One with Ferrari when they banned the private testing. They need a lot of time to reset their process of testing and putting the things on the car and making the updates work, because they were used to work in a completely different philosophy. And they need to stop that, because if you have plenty of time and no budget limit to test, you can make so many mistakes. Your methodology is one. But if they cut you, which is what happened to KTM, it's a completely different story. And you need to readapt your strategy to this new way of work, which is not easy at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, KTM face an uphill battle in the fact that everything they use is completely different to what everyone else uses. There's no, you know, they can't fall back on any Olin's data or any, you know, aluminium frame data. They all have to, the only data they have is KTM data.
Yes.
That'll be interesting to see how they get on. Of course, unfortunate end to the race for Iker Lecuona and Miguel Oliveira, but both riders are fine, we understand. Which is good news. Another rider who we know is fine, but I would imagine is still quite pissed off, is Dennis Foggia. Because, of course, the Moto3 Championship was decided at the weekend. And first of all, congratulations to Pedro Acosta. You know, take nothing away from what that 17-year-old done, the rookie. It's been a sensational season. But you also can't take away the fact that Foggia in the second half of the year was brilliant and had a real shot of keeping the championship alive. And then this incident with Darren Binder happens. I mean, I just want to get, first of all, your opinion on it, because everyone has an opinion.
About the incident, I think the incident is pretty clear. But the problem is what's behind the incident. And not only, I mean, yesterday I was listening to the riders very carefully about their opinions. Of course, some of them don't want to get into trouble by saying, giving their real opinion. But I really appreciate the others, the ones that speak clear and say what they think. So don't forget that Darren Binder will be a MotoGP rider next year.
Yes.
So, yes, the guy needs to learn, and he cannot make this kind of riding in MotoGP.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think that it's only his fault what's happening and why he's going into MotoGP next year.
Yeah. No, that I think that's a fair enough way to put it. I mean, Bagnaia spoke about maybe MotoGP should introduce a super license like they do in Formula One, which is an interesting concept, because if you look at Darren Binder's record coming up to MotoGP, it's not really been great. He's been in Moto3 for 7 seasons and he's only won once, and he has a reputation as being, whatever his nickname is, Dive Bomb, which a motorcycle racer probably shouldn't have that nickname, you know, given the nature of motorcycle racing. And I think part of the problem that Darren kind of gets away with that is because, you know, I'm not saying everyone in the media, but a lot of the media kind of hype that up. Oh, here comes Dive Bomb. Oh, it's great fun. It's not the way to race. And I mean,
I think the main problem is that listen, I mean, we are living in a time where the FIM, Dorna, and all the organizations involved are trying to make the sport more safe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we are having a guy with a very, very, very big portfolio of crazy or, let's say, over-aggressive incidents on track, who's going to skip Moto2 and he's going to be promoted to MotoGP straight away.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and he's going to bring that Moto3 mentality with him. And this is something Rossi's spoken about, is that the problem in the junior classes is that until recently, the stewards haven't been very hard on it, and they're just bringing that aggressiveness up through the ladder.
I mean, the first time that this guy tested a big bike, an R1, was last summer in Brno, in a private test. So it doesn't make any sense to me. No. But the problem is that, as they say, they live in a free market. So the market puts the it's everything. So that's the problem below the surface. Because this new team, RNF, Sepang, blah, 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 prefers to put Darren Binder because he brings a lot of support, I mean, economically, to the team. Yep. So, and that's the main problem, the thing, because nobody has the, let's say, the legitimacy to say enough, you cannot bring this guy up, because and then RNF will say, okay, but I don't have money. You know, that's the main problem.
Yeah, you're right, the financial aspect, but that's maybe where the super license comes in, is that if you start to police that a little bit more. But some riders have rightly pointed out, well, look at what happened to Fabio. He didn't have a great CV, and now he's world champion. But I would argue that you can't really compare, because Fabio was never had a reputation as being a dangerous rider.
Not even Jack Miller. That was
exactly the one. And Jack also had 3 years to develop in MotoGP. Darren might only have the one, and if he might not even have a full year, he might have 4 or 5 races.
There's another quote really interesting from, I think it was Joan Mir, who told us, listen, it's not only Darren's fault, because don't forget that he's having a lot of pressure trying to show and trying to demonstrate that he deserves to be in MotoGP next year. And this pressure sometimes pushes you to make the wrong decisions. And also next year he will have even more pressure trying to show that he's good enough to be in MotoGP, which, I mean, it's the perfect storm.
Yeah, exactly. This is where the rules need to be adjusted, because you wouldn't promote, you know, some 10th place finisher in Formula 3 straight to Formula 1. You just wouldn't do that. Even if they had money, you wouldn't do that, because completely different.
Different risk, different everything.
Well, the risk is, I think, the most important aspect, because we can't forget that these are 300 horsepower bikes. You know, we've seen a lot of accidents this year on Moto3 machinery, fatal accidents. You know, you can't ride in MotoGP like you do in Moto3. It's not going to work.
So, and that's the main problem. And that's why Moto2 is a really, really, really good school.
Yeah. Yeah, and, absolutely.
And Darren is going to miss it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think of course, this will be something that will be interesting to follow as the winter goes on. But I think on that note, Yuri, we'll round off there. Thank you ever so much for your company. I know it's been logistically quite difficult. We've had a lot of technical difficulties this day with the podcast recording, but we got there. We'll be back next week to discuss the final round of the season. Thank God. It's been a long season. If you liked our other podcasts, you can go and listen to them on all our podcast platforms. And of course, follow Autosport and motorsport.com for all your MotoGP news. But until next time, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep taking care of yourselves.